Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. We are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, you can go to pnwa.org. Well, today is a special day. Not only is it our first broadcast of the new year, we're starting out the new year on a high note, no pun intended. Today's guest is the one and only Carol Bayer Sager, who I see has just joined us in the studio. Awesome. Carol, her songbook goes back 50 years and includes unbelievable array of songs from That's What Friends Are For to Arthur's Theme to The Prayer, Don't Cry Out Loud, On My Own, Nobody Does It Better. She's worked with artists like Barbara Streisand, Michael Jackson, Frank Sinatra, Whitney Houston, Ray Charles, Dolly Parton, Aretha Franklin, Bette Midler, Celine Dion, and Rebecca McIntyre. She is also the author of a new memoir, which I highly recommend. They're Playing Our Song out now, and Carol is here with us. Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, William.
Hi. How are you doing? You can call me Bill if you'd like.
Bill. Okay. Hi, Bill.
Yeah. I go by both. So, Carol, you've written a book.
I've written a book.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think it took a long time, and I think that I'm happy with it.
You are?
I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah?
I didn't realize it would be so consuming, the process.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I find that anything I do, when I get into it, it's sort of the only thing I can do. It's like I'm not very good at being a creative multitasker, you know?
Right, right. Your focus, as you describe it in the book, and you spend a lot of time describing your creative process in the book, which I personally, as someone who is interested in art and how it's made of all kinds, I found just fascinating. And by your description, it's quite really, when you go into that zone, it feels like you're in what I pictured was like a dome sort of settled over you and the outside world kind of vanished. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it kind of dissipates and
and
there is no outside world. There's just, for me, since I'm a collaborative person, there's just me and the melody, or me and the person I'm collaborating with, and whatever's going to happen, you know, between us at that piano or guitar and synthesizer and me and a pad and or a computer. And, you know, for me, I say in the book, I've written every single way. I've given someone a lyric. I've had to write to someone else's melody without them being present. But my very favorite way to write is in a room with the person I'm going to be writing with, whether it be David Foster or Kenny Edmonds or whomever. I mean, it's just, for me, the real joy is in starting with almost nothing. I don't have a lyric. They don't have a melody, and they just start to, in the case of David, play the piano. In the case of Kenny, play his guitar. I've written with so many people, as you mentioned, but, you know, whatever their source is to make music, they start with nothing and just noodle around, and I hear something that I sort of like, and I go, which I think is my most often used phrase in collaboration. Mm-hmm. Play that again. I like that. And they do. And from there I go, oh, what about, and I start to hear something, and then they start to hear something based on the something I hear. And, you know, at the end of the day or 2 days or three, a song is born that didn't exist before and that couldn't have existed if the two of us weren't in that room that way.
Yeah. I love that description Carol, because it requires you, it requires you to so be in the moment. You have to trust
exactly
what is present at that moment and be ready for something to come at that moment in the unique sort of intersection of you and that person, and then whatever, however you define that from which the music comes, I guess you could say.
Exactly. For me, Bill, I always kind of say a little prayer before I go in the music room or someone else's music room, just praying that there's something left for me to say that'll be of value or of, you know, that will connect to the people who might hear it.
Right.
And to me, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, is to connect. And I think all my life, everything I've done, whether it be songwriting, which was the greater part of my life, or painting, or writing this book, which was a well over 2-year period.
Wow.
The intention is always to connect. So if somebody writes a review of the book on Instagram and says, "I felt so connected to her. I felt like she could be writing for me. You know, even though we live different lives, these feelings are like," and that's what I was hoping for. Even though I wrote a lot about the composing of music, I also wrote a lot about the journey of my life some of the obstacles that I had to overcome. And you know, I say, I don't know if I say it in the book, but I say sometimes when I speak, you know, no one should compare their insides to anybody else's outside. Because I know that on the surface it looked for a long time like, wow, look at her and look at her life, and who would want that life? But, you know, I struggled so much, particularly in the earlier parts of my life, with tremendous anxiety and insecurity and, you know, things that people wouldn't dream that someone in my shoes having hits and, you know, being in Los Angeles with cool people would possibly be, you know, struggling. But the fact is, you know, I did, and it's not such a surprise anymore. So many people now, celebrities, have written books about their struggle with this and their struggle with that, and you know, it.
But you wrote about it really honestly, Carol, and what came across to me, which I thought was so fascinating about this, is you wrote about the real stark contrast. This is when I picture your life based on having read this book. What I saw in my mind was sort of divided into two parts, and the creative part, which really dominated your life. I mean, creativity really from such a young age was a part of your income, was a part of your social life. Everything kind of grew out of creativity. But the way you describe it, at least in the book, is the creative life has got such clarity to it and such, I would say, fearlessness, actually. I know
and
you had
passion.
I'm sure you had, but such focus.
Yes.
You know?
Focus
and
fearlessness, passion.
Yes.
None of which existed in that other half of my
The other half was dominated by fear. It seemed like there was tremendous fear of death and disease and worry, worry.
Yes.
And it was so night and day.
I know, it's pretty amazing, and I think I write in the book that, you know, songwriting for me was not only gave me a life, but I think it saved my life, because it was the one place where all of that noise, negative noise, you know, messages that weren't true but I believed were true, went away. They just disappeared. And so that's another reason why I guess I spent so much of my life in that music room or in that studio, because that was the one place that was a safe lane.
That's right. That's right. That's just how Paul McCartney described Abbey Road, as like his it was his absolute happiest place to be, the Abbey Road Studios. Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I'm a huge Beatlephile.
I guess we're not alone in that. I mean, I heard Bruce Springsteen on an interview show recently saying that, you know, he kind of feels that almost most all the creative people he knows had one parent who basically said to them, you're not going to amount to anything. And another parent who said, you know, yes, you can, sort of.
Right.
And there was that dichotomy. And I've asked other creative people about it ever since I heard Bruce, and everyone but one was in complete agreement with him.
Yeah, yeah.
One person said, no, I felt completely loved and encouraged by both my parents. But, you know, but everyone else was sort of exactly what he described.
But you know what the advantage of having someone close to you saying you're not going to amount to anything, or I don't think you can do this, or it's too hard, or who do you think you are? I think there's an advantage to it, which is as nice as unconditional love. And I had a parent who was, my mom was very much that way for me. My dad wasn't awful, but it was harder for him. But I think the advantage of it is that it makes you decide for yourself. In the end, you have to decide that your belief in it comes from you, not from your parents, and not from the hit records even, really.
Well, actually,
that it comes from something else.
I think, first of all, I've been told, I for me it's true, that you tend to believe the parent who you perceive as the stronger parent. Now, my father was wonderfully positive and encouraging, but my mother was more critical of everything.
Yeah, everything.
She did encourage me, though, with my music, I have to say, but she was so critical that I believed her messages, that I wasn't enough, that she wasn't this.
Yeah.
And I think that part of why we do what we do, other than, thank God, being born with a talent to do it, is to show them that they're wrong, or to show them, you know, look, I do exist. Look, you know, listen, you know, see me, hear me, because you feel very unseen and unheard in a family dynamic where one parent is constantly kind of telling you you're not enough in every step of way they do that, you know?
Yeah, but you know, I think memoir is my forte. It's my passion. It's what I write. It's what I love. It's what I teach. And I've come to understand that, and so the troubling parent, but for, there would be no memoir if there weren't troubling parents. You know, they are God's gift to the memoirist. And but I've come to the decision, I think for all people, all the time, are always talking about themselves, almost no matter what they say and to whom they say it.
Very
so
often.
So if she says to you, you're not good enough, there's no way she can say that if she's not thinking it. I don't think it's possible.
Well, she was probably thinking about herself, you mean.
Yeah, yeah. So in other words, if she says you're not good enough, she really means it about herself.
Yes, there's an expression that says point a finger and four point back at you.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
So I totally agree with you.
The book, I was thinking about this, the book is called They're Playing Our Song, and obviously it's a quote from song. It was a play, too. It was a musical, right? Was it?
There was a musical back in the 80s that I wrote with Marvin Hamlisch, who's since gone too soon, and Neil Simon, who was at one point probably America's greatest comic playwright. So Neil got fascinated with my relationship with Marvin, because Marvin used to talk to Neil about it, and decided he wanted to write a play, a musical, and would we write the music and lyrics, and that's where that title came from. It was a play that ran on Broadway for close to 4 years.
It's awesome. And I was thinking just about the title, They're Playing Our Song. Can you remember, and I guess it probably would have been A Groovy Kind of Love, but can you remember the first time you were out and about?
Yes.
Just little Carol, not just hearing the song, not hearing the song, because I'm sure that was exciting on the radio. I'm sure that was exciting. But the first time you heard a stranger singing a song of yours and not knowing you were there and just singing, humming along to one of your songs?
Oh, that's more difficult.
Has that ever happened?
Exactly. I think it has happened. I think it happened years ago at a little club called Reno Sweeney, and I'd gone to see a friend of mine perform, and then someone else came on and performed, and they sang a song of mine, and I don't think they knew I was there. But the wonderful thing is that, you know, in the musical, they're playing our song. That song came about, they're playing our song, when one of the characters said, you know, I'm not a dancer, but, you know, sometimes I hear my song and just playing in the background, and all of a sudden I just want to jump up and say, oh, my God, don't you recognize that? Don't you know what they're playing? And that feeling has never really left me, because very often I'll be in a restaurant having lunch with a friend or having dinner with my husband, and there's a pianist in the background. And all of a sudden, I will hear. Now, I don't think anyone else is as acutely aware of what I'll hear them playing a song of mine. And I really have to resist the desire to jump up and go, wait a minute, don't you hear what they're playing? Don't you recognize that? You know, so I don't even say anything, because it's like, Carol, you know, get over it. You know, you're in a conversation.
I love it. After all the songs you've written, 50 years of songwriting, you've had hundreds and hundreds of songs out there and all these awards, and blah, 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 to still have that kind of childlike excitement over it. And I don't care. The thought that something that can come to you in the supreme privacy of your creative imagination, that just comes from that wonderful, fertile formlessness that is creativity, that comes to you, and then it travels out and affects all those people and makes and brings other people pleasure, and other people sing it in their own voice and bring their own thing to it. How do you not find that magical, that it travels?
Well, I
like
do.
That?
I mean, it's very joyful. Sometimes I'm on Facebook, you know, and sometimes someone will feel really good about a song of mine, and they'll send me a karaoke version that they did of it.
Yeah.
And that's hard sometimes, because...
Oh, why is that hard?
Well, occasionally it's so awful. I mean, it's so beyond awful that it's hard to even listen to. And, you know, when they want me to comment on it.
I really
want to say, don't give up your day job, you know. But I say something sort of nice, like, I really appreciate you, you know, singing my song, or something honest, but not encouraging to singing careers. But it, but you know what? It's just really always lovely when somebody wants to sing your song.
Yeah.
And sometimes I go online to look up an artist who recorded my song, like on YouTube, just to hear it, or, you know, to hear, see the video. And then I'm amazed by the other numbers of artists who recorded the same song and who I didn't know always recorded.
Oh, yeah.
That's another fun thing for a songwriter.
So... this is a common experience it's certainly common for me, and I write about my life to the exclusion of all of the things now. That's my subject matter for the last 10 years or so. I wrote fiction
You've been writing memoirs.
Or short pieces, long pieces, but I write about my own life in one form or another, whether it's personal essays or memoir or something like that. That's what I write
Neil
about.
Neil Simon said to me a long time ago, the best thing you can write about is yourself, because there's nothing else you know as well.
That's right. But here's my question to you, Carol, because this has been my experience and the experience of most of the people I know who write memoir-type stuff, is there's the story as you sort of know it in your mind before you write it, and then you write it, and usually something new is learned in the writing of it, even though you're writing a story that you've lived already. Did you have that experience?
Oh, for sure. Over and over.
Yeah? Yeah? Like what?
Well, for the very first realization I had is I was starting to just barely organize the material was the realization, I went, oh, my God, I've had a really big life. Which I did not ever realize
really?
While living it. No.
All the places
no.
you've been and the people you've hopped, it's like a who's who of entertainment
yeah,
and music.
But when you're in the midst of living your life day to day, or not living it in some instances in my life up until a certain point, you're just not thinking about the trajectory of the journey. You know, you're really thinking about this time, you know, this time and what's going on and what's coming up and what did I just love doing and, you know, but you don't think about it. At least I didn't. It was amazing to me to realize, oh, my God. I mean, because I had to leave so much out of the book.
Sure.
Part of writing a good book is the editing. It's as much what you take out as what you put in, you know.
Yeah.
So, so that was one of the first surprises. And then, of course, you learn about yourself because, you know, you see a pattern to things that maybe you didn't see until you started writing them down. And you go, wow, I sure did that often in my life, or I made that mistake a number of times, or, you know, there's always discovery, and if that discovery can help you to shift into being a better person and a better friend and a better wife, then it's really valuable.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's what you do with these discoveries that matter, not just discovering them.
Yeah. Well, if a good discovery, I always felt that if I've written something, whether it's short or long, if I liked it, I felt like, I write music too, and I remember once I wrote this piece, and I come to music writing later in life, but I was writing it, and I was playing pieces for my wife, and she would be delighted because her husband was writing music, and it sounded like music. It was very exciting. And then one day I played something for her, and she was like, oh, the middle doesn't really come together, and blah, blah, blah. And I realized I didn't care because I knew that I had learned something about music writing in that piece, even if the piece didn't come together. You know what I mean? I was more interested in what had grown in me than it being a perfect piece. And I thought, that's the relationship I want to all my
that's
work
great.
All the time.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's so important.
I think
and
so.
And hard to achieve. I mean, that's great to get there.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, it must have been, you know, you describe your relationship to songwriting so beautifully and so... you really get into it. You let yourself really write about it again and again, which I appreciated for myself because it's my personal interest. But I would think, even though book writing is a different animal in terms of sort of the amount of time it takes, for sure, and the fact that there's no music actually present in it, that your relationship to your creative self would have been extremely helpful. Where you have to go in order, what you're listening to in order to write, is probably not that different than what you maybe listen to when you write music. Is that true?
Well,
even though there's no piano there or whatever.
Well, not exactly, because sometimes in writing music, you have no roadmap at all. You just have to pull it out of thin air. So it's more like writing lyrics to a motion picture. Writing a book because you know there's a story, you know, in a motion picture, you know, let's say the theme song for Arthur, which, you know, Arthur speaks, you know the story, so you know what you need to capture. And in writing your memoir, you basically know the story. I mean, there are things that come back to you that you've totally forgotten, but you do know when you start write it down, it's your story. So you're not writing blindly, but you are in a way because you're still starting with nothing every day on the page.
Yeah.
And so in that way, yes, you know, it's challenging. It's challenging. But,
did you like the challenge?
Yes, I did.
Were you excited by it most days?
I was amazed by how much of writing is rewriting. Because
yeah.
that's something I didn't do as much in writing songs.
Yeah, it doesn't
kinda
sound
like
it. Kind of
like, oh, if they don't like that, I'll write a different song.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a lot of, can you rewrite this and can you rewrite this part? And
right.
Sometimes, but not a lot at all. And
yeah.
here, so much of it, I turned it in the first time to my literary agent. And I thought
yeah.
she was going to say, oh, this is fantastic.
Oh, no.
She said, well, parts of this are just wonderful, but parts of it really are not there at all yet. You have
yeah.
to dig deeper and you have to, you know, put it in context to the times and you have to go much deeper into yourself. And that was sometimes hard and sometimes sad
mm-hmm.
to go through the painful times, relive them. You know,
yeah.
sometimes I'd get anxiety just by living through some of those times that were so hard. But But I'm glad I did it, and I'm particularly glad that people seem to connect to it after they've read it, because that's really all I ever try to do, is
yeah.
connect to other people.
Who was the painter? Who was the painter? It wasn't, he wrote beautifully about, he wrote a beautiful book about painting. Robert Henri. And
I think I have that
he
paperback,
said was,
actually.
What's that?
I think I have that paperback, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful book on the creative process. And what he said mm-hmm. in it, you know, it's not about the painting. For the artist, it's not about the painting. It is about what you have to connect to in order to make the painting. I mean, the painting, obviously, you're glad you made it, and the song and the essay, the poem, whatever it is. But the real gift is what, for me, for sure, is what I have to connect to in order to make it. That is where the immediate gift is, regardless
yes.
of what happens to the piece, whether it gets bought or not, or blah, blah, blah. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think that's definitely true. And another thing is that I have never really felt that the words are coming from me. I've always
no.
felt like they're sort of coming through me. And then
yes.
I'm connecting, in fact, with something greater than me, you know,
yes.
a greater wisdom or a higher power,
yeah.
or as you will, however, you
right.
know, whatever you call that. And I'm a conduit for those words
right.
to come through.
Yeah.
That's why I
yeah.
pray before I go into any session to, you know, for the words to be able to find a way through me. And
yeah.
Find expression.
I think that is the perfect relationship, the creative process. Someone once asked Keith Richards, they said, oh, how does it feel to be the guy who wrote the greatest, you know, guitar riff? They're talking about Satisfaction, you know,
uh-huh.
the history of rock and roll or whatever. How does it feel to be the guy who wrote that? He said, well, I was just glad I was there when it came along. And I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you really
what I mean.
Find it, don't you think like you found it, and if you found it, it had to kind of exist independent of you, because it feels
That's
like
right.
finding.
I kind of believe everything is out there. Sometimes,
yeah.
you know, when I have an idea or a song and I'm working on it with someone, I feel like, boy, I'd like to hurry up and get this out because I know that someone else has this idea. You know, nothing is really completely original. You know?
Yeah.
It's we're pulling it out of the same
Ether, kind of. Yeah, I know. When McCartney, supposedly when he heard Yesterday in a Dream, that's where he heard the melody. They were all very excited. They ran around humming it for everybody because they wanted to make sure it hadn't been written already, because they felt sure that it had to have been written because it was such a perfect little melody. But in fact, it hadn't been. At least they couldn't find anybody. So, well, that is awesome. Well, Carol, you are a delight. It's been so nice talking to you, and our time
it's been great talking to you.
Nearly up, but maybe before we go, could you answer one more question for me?
Of course.
I'd like to ask all my guests this. And so what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence. And the sentence is, if writing has taught me anything, and by writing in this case I mean everything, writing songs, writing books, writing anything you write at all. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
It's taught me that the truth lies within ourselves, and all we need to do is quietly pray to access it, and we'll find it, whether it's coming out in a song or in a book or in a painting. The creativity is... I also feel that it's taught me that very honestly, that's where I'm most alive.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. That is a beautiful answer. Carol, congratulations on the book.
Thanks so much, Bill.
It reaches lots and lots of people, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's called They're Playing Our Song by Carol Bayer Sager. It's where all fine books are sold. Go check it out ASAP. I will be back in a couple of weeks with another guest. Don't know who yet. We'll find out soon. Somebody good. And, of course, I'll be doing the Fearless Writing, probably starting in February. Until then, people, you know what? Just go listen to a Carol Bayer Sager song. You won't be disappointed, I don't think. If I can get this music to play, oh, there it is. Thanks again, everybody. See you in a bit.